Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Paul McLaughlin has supported independent news directly for 5 years. Be like Paul. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, March 15th, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
Am I a Skrull or am I Len Peralta? Spoiler, I'm Len Peralta. Ah, spoiler.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Joining us this week, or this day, actually, Patrick Norton, host of Tech Thing and AVXL, is back. How's it going, Patrick?
I'm thinking some people think a day with me is like a week, so you're probably accurate on both counts.
No worries. Patrick's back to talk to us a little bit about that new NVIDIA card that just got announced yesterday. We've got that coming up. We are also going to touch on the events in New Zealand, not so much on the events themselves, but on the response by tech companies regarding the video there. So just a warning to folks that we will be getting into a little bit more serious topic later in the show. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Spotify filed a complaint with the EU that Apple's App Store is anti-competitive. Now, Apple posted a public response Thursday emphasizing how much Spotify has benefited from that same App Store. Apple also detailed how many apps in the store don't generate revenue for Apple itself. The post didn't mention the EU complaint or directly address the points that were raised by Spotify, though.
Google's Gboard keyboard for iOS now supports Google Translate. That's a feature that's been on Gboard for Android since about, 2017. All 103 languages are supported by Google Translate in the new Gboard for iOS.
Samsung's Notebook 9 Pro and Notebook 9 Pen, announced at CES, will be available starting March 17th. St. Patrick's Day presents for everybody. Yeah. The 13-inch Notebook 9 Pro is available for $1,999 with 8 gigs of RAM and 256 gigs of storage, or $1,299 for 16 gigs of RAM and 512 gigs of storage. The Notebook 9 Pen ranges from $1,399 to $1,799 with either a 13 or 15-inch model and up to 1 terabyte of storage plus the updated S Pen.
A verbal typo there. You said Notebook 9 Pro was $1,999. It's $1,099.
$1,099.
It is not, in fact, more expensive than the higher capacity RAM one. I think that, just wanted to clarify that. A jury in the federal court of San Diego found that Apple owes Qualcomm $31 million for infringing 3 patents related to managing battery life. I imagine they'll appeal. It's not even the only one of these kinds of cases between these two companies, but just so you know, there's the latest.
Alex Heath over at Cheddar reports that Snap plans to announce a mobile gaming platform to developers on April 4th, dubbed Project Cognac. The platform features games, or will anyway, from outside developers designed to work within the Snapchat app. As part of their gaming push, the company acquired both the Australian studio Pretty Great for $8.6 million and the British-based browser game engine startup Play Canvas in 2018.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about what Facebook's doing with AI.
Yeah, Facebook is launching an AI tool that it says can detect and flag, quote, near nude images or videos that are shared without permission on Facebook, and Instagram. The images would then be viewed by moderators, human ones. Currently, non-consensual intimate images have to be reported by somebody before that they can get removed. So if they're not reported, they tend to kind of hang out for a while. Facebook also said it would continue to improve those tools and response speed and launched a page at facebook.com/safety/.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Not without my consent for information about dealing with this kind of content.
Yeah, so this is often called revenge porn. If you remember, Facebook has a tool in some countries, including the US, where you can choose to upload pictures of yourself that Facebook promises they won't share with anyone else, but in order to make sure that the algorithm can catch them if anyone else tries to upload them. Basically, you know, it's like content ID for your own pictures. They're expanding that to a bunch of other countries, but that requires you to do something that you may not be comfortable with. So this AI is a chance for them to say, we would like to try to detect stuff by looking at what the image looks like, the context, who's posting it, what the caption says. And we've done some machine learning training to try to figure out when that is ill-intentioned.
And also, you know, a near nude image. Okay. I understand what Facebook's going for here, right? And you almost rather get a false positive than miss things. But okay, what if I'm in a bathing suit, you know, and it gets flagged and a moderator, for whatever reason, think, you know, maybe Sarah should know about this. Like, do I get an email? I mean, what are the next steps after that to make sure that I understand what's going on?
They talk about it in the post. It'll notify a moderator. The moderator will review it and say like, yeah, okay, this doesn't seem like a false positive. Let's notify this person and say, I don't think this is supposed to be up. We're going to pull it down unless you say otherwise. So I don't have any problem on that end of it. And if there are too many false positives, well, A, they need to have better machine learning training. But B, that's why they're having these not automatically pulled down, but sent to human moderators as a way to help the human moderators keep track of what's happening out there.
Mm-hmm. And upset the moderators, as we all know.
Oh, that's not a job I would want. You're right.
No.
The Tokyo 2020 Olympics and Paralympics launched their robot project Friday, showing two robots designed to assist supporters, workers, and athletes during the games. 16 of Toyota's human support robots, or HSRs, a small white robot with facial features, will assist wheelchair users and can carry things and guide viewers to seats. 20 of Panasonic's Power Assist Suits, a battery-powered exoskeleton, will help workers lift and carry objects like luggage without straining the back. It can also be used by athletes while they're in the village, not while they're competing, obviously. The Tokyo Olympics begin on July 24th, 2020. Patrick, obviously very Japanese for the Tokyo Olympics to have a bunch of robots, but these seem kind of cool.
I'm part of me is like waiting for the first video of a couple. It won't happen in Japan. It won't happen this early, but I'm waiting for the first time the exoskeleton fighting starts, or people start flinging things at each other with the exoskeleton.
It would not be the first exoskeleton fight that originated from Japan, would it?
No. I mean, plus anytime you can, you know, make an Aliens reference with Sigourney Weaver, although I think I named the wrong movie. I'm fascinated. I hope they work well. I know a lot of the earlier airport robots have been works in progress.
Yeah. I wonder about the HSRs. They kind of remind me of that airport robot sort of thing with the facial features and everything. But if they're just kind of carrying things or kind of helping you move around in flat surfaces, sure. It's kind of nifty. And I think we're going to see more robots coming out of Tokyo. It's the exoskeleton. This is the one that captures my imagination too.
Yeah.
Sarah, do any of these robots really excite you? Yeah.
We talk about robots so much. Now I'm just like, sure, they're part of the Olympics. Seems,
what a world
seems
we
like
live
the right
in.
Place. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Tokyo, it all makes sense. It all fits. Okay, let's talk about passing notes in class, shall we? Or at least the modern way to do it. The Atlantic's Taylor Lorenz has an article discussing how school students are using Google Docs as a way to chat with other students during class. Google Docs is often used to do collaborative exercises. So students have gotten pretty savvy. They could use the built-in chat. There is one, but there are other clever workarounds. For example, highlighting a word allows for comments in a pop-up box that can be quickly hidden by pressing the resolve button, sort of like ephemeral messaging for Google Docs, I guess. Or sometimes you could create a doc and then each kid could pick a different font so everybody knows who's who, and then chat line by line in the body of the text. And kids who don't use Google Docs do similar things in the online version of Word or even school-run collaboration spaces.
Yeah. So if you haven't used this in Google Docs, just right click anywhere and choose comment, and the little box pops up and resolve gets rid of everything. Now, it does destroy the record of your conversation. But if you're just chatting about, you know, like, hey, we're going to meet up after school. You want to get some food or whatever.
Right.
You don't.
Yeah.
Really,
I mean, you're whispering to your classmate. Yeah. I mean, that just sort of goes away, too. It's smart. I didn't have the internet when I was in elementary school or high school for that matter. So this was just not, you know, having the internet and trying to keep kids off of their computers or their mobile phones or whatever was just not something that, you know, I don't have any experience firsthand with this, but you know, kids want to chat with each other, right? Yeah. You know, you're not supposed to be whispering to each other. You're not supposed to be passing notes. You're not supposed to be chatting about non-school things within Google Docs, but I think that's pretty smart of them, especially if, you know, maybe you don't have access to the internet, but everybody's on their computer and you're supposed to be doing some spreadsheet collaboration.
Well, I think you'd have to have access to the internet for that to work, though, wouldn't you?
Well, you could be
for Google Docs. I think it would
on
have
a local
access to
Wi-Fi.
But you'd be on the high school internet, which would block out a lot of stuff for sure. So
sure,
you wouldn't, your WhatsApp might be blocked. Yeah,
right.
Patrick, you're a father. Do you think that this will still be around by the time your kids are passing notes in class, or will they be doing it by augmented reality?
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite lines of all time is William Gibson, "The street finds its own uses for things." I'm also laughing as anytime I see an article, it's like, shock, children using tools to do things that the original inventors did not intend. you know, I just think about there's a Dilbert cartoon in 1,000 years ago where Dilbert's got to basically do a content filter, and somebody's like, okay, so it's you against every horny 14-year-old child in the universe. Good luck. It's just, yeah, there'll be some horrifying variation on this. I'm just wondering what happens at the point where we become kind of cyborg and we have, you know, our cell phones are embedded into our necks. Like, what do you end up doing to block this kind of stuff? Because it's amazing to hear stories from teachers about some of the stuff, like the incredibly creative ways kids are hiding their phones to continue having conversations when they're not supposed to be in classrooms. I mean, this is an ancient tradition.
Is it something where, okay, we look at this story and we're like, oh, yeah. They told kids to put their phones away. They're looking to make sure they're not passing notes. So the kids figured out a way to chat over Google Docs in a way that the teachers can't immediately see. They're supposed to be using this tool for collaboration. It's part of their lesson. And even when they're home working on their homework, the parents may think, oh, they're working on that Google Doc with their friends, but they're really chatting. Is that a problem? And the other side of is it, or should we continue to try to crack down? Because even knowing they'll always find a way around, at least it slows them down a tiny bit.
Yes, the latter one, as a parent. hold the line. Sorry.
I think that's the key, right? Is not we expect these policies to eliminate all distraction and kids will only work on. No, I mean, it's almost healthy for them to figure this out. But also, you don't want to make it so easy that they end up not being able to work on their stuff at all.
Yeah, it's a thin line because it always amazes me. I get a lot of questions like, what do you do to filter the internet from your children? I'm like, I don't. I make them use the internet, with the door open and in public area open the family areas of the house, not necessarily their bedroom. And at some point, that's going to become more challenging as they get older. But I just, kids, they want to learn things. They're going to figure out a way to learn them. That's certainly how any of a number of people in my generation started hacking the internet, because they wanted access to things that they didn't have at home. Again, honorable tradition, maybe not legal, but certainly where some of the most talented technologists I know got their starts.
Circle of life. Some of our presidential candidates were part of Cult of the Dead Cow, apparently. All right. NVIDIA announced the GTX 1660 GPU Thursday, starting at $219 or £199 UK, coming from EVGA, Asus, and a few others. It does not support DLSS or ray tracing. This is not an RT. This is a GTX. But NVIDIA says it has a 15% boost over the GTX 1060 and is 130% faster than the 960. Patrick, what else should we know about this?
The really interesting takeaway from this card is that the processor is incredibly friendly to overclocking and really, really easy to overclock. There's a great article by Sebastian Peake over at PC Per. And by the time he was done overclocking it, he was looking at better than 16, like equivalent, roughly the equivalent of a 1660 Ti, which is a card that costs like $60 more, $40 to $60 more. It does solid, not great numbers at 2560 by 1440. It does very, very well at 1080p. So, which is the vast majority of Steam gaming, like nearly all of it is done on 1080p monitors. And then a much lower resolution is the second most popular monitor. Like I want to say 80% is 1080p monitors, 90%, something crazy like that. So, for the vast majority of gamers, this is the new 1060. It's faster than a 1060. Not huge amounts until you overclock it, but this is a really nice card and really friendly for overclocking that I think if you've been waiting and waiting and waiting, it's probably time to go ahead and buy a GPU at this point.
Yeah, $219, that seems like a fairly reasonable price, especially if you've been waiting for a while. If you were someone who just bought, say, a 1060 or something like that, must you weep? Did you pull the trigger too soon?
You probably pulled the trigger too soon, but we've also, like, on This Week in Computer Hardware, we've been talking about, hey, pretty much when the 1660 Ti came out, that was pretty much the death knell. At that point, that card and the 1060 were selling for about the same price. So, just stop buying 1060s, stop buying 1070s. It's time to look to the new generation. It's also been really interesting to watch, NVIDIA take, kind of split, like, okay, this is our lineup that's going to have the horsepower to do ray tracing, and this is our lineup that's not going to have the horsepower to do ray tracing. I think it's smart, especially at the low end, also because there's just so few games that actually take advantage of RTX at this point. I don't think you're missing out on much of anything.
Yeah, I think one of the decisions people are trying to make when they buy these cards is, how long will it be until I need to buy another card? And the ray tracing part of this really makes that murkier, doesn't it?
It does. It's actually kind of frustrating. So one of the things that happens, a piece of hardware comes out, and ray tracing was a particularly brutal example of this, right? We saw the first RTX cards came out, you know, right around Black Friday, right around the tail end of November, beginning of December. And when you looked at the regular 3D performance versus ray tracing performance, the ray tracing performance was atrocious. And then a few weeks later, there was a massive update to the firmware or for the drivers for the first RTX cards. And then it was a 50% increase in performance, which is huge. But, you know, as these games, as more RTX games are written, as more games are written with RTX kind of from the foundation, performance will go up as the number of games goes up. I mean, literally there's like, you know, three or four things you can play using RTX right now. You know, a year from now, I'd probably say, yeah, buy an RTX card of some point, of some type. But also at that point, we'll also see a whole bunch, you know, probably the beginnings of the next generation cards or maybe some updates at the low end. It's also interesting because AMD is releasing their Navi cards, the next generation Navi cards, possibly as early as August of this year, is the latest rumor mongering around that. So
if I'm a bargain monger, I was going to say bargain hunter, but I just like the idea of a bargain monger, somebody who, like an ironmonger who just crafts bargains. Is it ridiculous to expect the 1060 to go down in price? And is that a bad buy?
You know, it's messy right now. The kind of back channel story is that hardware manufacturers kept building a ton of, you know, 1060, 1070s, and to a lesser degree, 1080s, right? Because they build more of the cheap cards, less of the more expensive cards, because, you know, they were just hammering out cards. Because for the better part of a year, a little over a year, they could sell every card they could make. And then as the Ethereum/Bitcoin/cryptocurrency mayhem sort of slowed down and then screeched to a grinding halt, what happened was that people stopped buying cards. And at some point, NVIDIA was like, didn't we? Oh, you know, cryptocurrency may have actually helped our sales in the last year. I know we said it didn't, but won't say we were lying, but yeah. We were lying. You know, and the flip side of that is a friend of mine who was running a pretty serious crypto mining operation in his garage, because in his part of the U.S., electricity is incredibly cheap. By the time he pulled the 17 systems down, he had somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 GPUs to sell. So right now, the great bargains in GPUs, if you trust a GPU that's been running flat out for 6 months or a year or more, which a lot of people do, some people don't. The two biggest experts I know on that are completely divided. One says it's insane to do that. The other one says they're fine. You know, the bargains right now are probably, you know, locally word of mouth or Craigslist, where people are selling off the cards that they put into into crypto mining systems. And those should grossly undercut the price, the retail price of the cards. You know, the vendors all seem to have been doing a really good job of kind of like, yeah, we're keeping a trickle out. You know, I haven't checked the prices in the last 24 hours. I wouldn't entirely be shocked if all of a sudden 1060 cards got really, really cheap, because there seemed to be a glut of 3 gigabyte 1060 cards. Don't buy those, period. Unless you just need a GPU for no money. And there were, you know, no 1080s, very, very few 1070s, and a lot of 6 gigabyte 1060s. So I don't know where any of the rest of might be going, but I would really think twice. If you know, don't spend more than $200, $180, $150 on a 1060 right now, because the performance advantage when you overclock the 1660 is pretty huge.
All right. Thank you for that, Patrick. Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right. At least 49 people were killed in a shooting at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, Friday, and video is being circulated still purporting to be a 17-minute Facebook live stream from one of the shooters. Facebook said it was alerted by police shortly after the stream started, and it removed the video as well as the shooter's Facebook and Instagram accounts. Now, if you believe that the 17-minute video is that very same video, which it very well may be, we can't say, we haven't confirmed that, that would mean it took Facebook about 17 minutes to pull it down. Video claiming to be copies have appeared elsewhere on Facebook as well as on YouTube, Reddit, and Twitter. All the platforms claim to be removing the videos as soon as they become aware of them. And New Zealand police have asked people not to share the video. It doesn't really matter whether this is in fact the video or not. This is video that these platforms don't want out there for multiple reasons. And it seems to be I don't want to make this too little of this, but it seems to be the same kind of situation you have in less serious arenas, like copyright infringement or and we were talking about revenge porn earlier, where things get posted first, then you find them and take them down. A lot of folks out there are saying these companies need to do better. They need to be able to stop these live streams from even happening at the beginning. But to do that requires something along the lines of prior restraint, which, you know, again, these companies are allowed to do that. They're not governmental agencies, so they're not bound by First Amendment or laws similar to that in other parts of the world. But that's hard. It is hard to allow people to share things and keep track of everything they're sharing and figure out what it is fast enough to know when it's like this, everyone would agree this shouldn't be there. And I think this is a case where everyone agrees this shouldn't be there. So that's the difficult situation that we are in as internet users and that tech companies are in as companies. And it's easy, I think, to throw stones and say they should do better. Sure, they should do better. But how do you do that? And where do you draw the line? Patrick, Sarah, I know this is not an easy conversation to have, but Sarah, I know in our pre-show you had some pretty strong opinions about this.
Well, okay, yeah, and I mean the story is it's hard to talk about for a lot of reasons, but if you stick to the tech part of it, I understand that, you know, it's certainly in machine learning and AI, we can get to a point hopefully where, if there's a video in question that is not going to be allowed on the platform, we can get to a point where subsequent videos that have enough of the same data, you know, they could be called something different or they could be maybe manipulated a little bit or chopped up, can at least be flagged as, no, it's that video again, and we're not doing that. Okay, we're not there yet, but I can see where tech companies, particularly dealing with video and live stream and all of that stuff, YouTube, Facebook, and the rest, could get to a point where we can manage stuff like this a lot more easily. But the first video in question, I don't know how, I don't care how powerful you are as a tech company. If I, with, you know, no criminal record, decide to do something horrific out of nowhere and I live stream it, there is no company, there is no person even who's going to know that ahead of time necessarily. Maybe there's a history of stuff going on, but if there isn't, I don't know how you can blame Facebook for this.
It's the scale of being able to auto detect live streams and try to train machine learning. That certainly feels possible, but it's not as easy as it might sound. There's the whole battle of content ID, where it seems like you should be able to say, hey, once you know this video shouldn't be there, put its signature in the database and block it from being posted by anyone. Except we know content ID isn't perfect either direction. It has false positives where it pulls down things it shouldn't, and it doesn't always find the things it should because they're slightly manipulated. So that's not a perfect system either. Patrick, what do you think of all this?
You know, I'm having a lot of complicated thoughts that on one hand are simply like, why are people so broken? You know, it's you know, you spend enough time in the right corners of the internet, you know what has been seen cannot be unseen. And a friend of mine's like, oh, you know, my son's looking at X. I'm like, yeah, you need to have to talk to your son, because I'm sure there's like anime collections on 4chan, but generally speaking, people aren't going to 4chan for chipper stuff. You know, and this also bumps against the whole concept of free speech and everything else. But you think about the War of the Worlds, for example, right? Sunday, October 30th, 1938. And it was a CBS radio, right? Mercury Theater on the air. And people freaked out because despite the fact that they had identified it as being not a real thing and a radio drama, people thought it was real. And ever since then, there's always been certain genres of media, like, you know, the Blair House, the Blair Witch House project, the Blair Witch House, lots of other stuff where they're trying to create this authentic media, right? And so the nightmare situation is for a big media company to create some sort of viral thing that's taking advantage of live streaming and for Facebook or YouTube or whoever to slam it down. Now, I think they would be operating hand in glove and communicating, you know, to make this authentic experience happen in an incredibly fake manner. But, you know, I am almost sympathetic I'm sympathetic to the issue that anybody at any time can do something incredibly horrifying with a perfectly, healthy, normal, whatever you want to call it, tool, right? Mm-hmm. The flip side is that, and I certainly was torqued up on my soapbox and, howling like a meth addict in pre-show, where I was basically like, well, of course they have difficulty slowing these things down. They've had difficulty. There was this period where I knew a whole bunch of people who were fairly serious YouTubers were like, woo, Facebook, YouTube alternative, it's going to be huge, it's going to be – and then they realized that there were just so many egregious issues with their they didn't have the tools to protect intellectual property. They didn't have a particularly great reporting system. They didn't really care. And I think sort of the laissez-faire attitude there, comes around and about intellectual property comes around and bites them firmly on the ass when mm-hmm. there's an actual like ZOMG, just what we need this week is to be tied in is we're the place to go to find people posting video of this horrendous mm-hmm. incident. But that also gets back to, it's kind of like shutting off the supply of drugs by stopping the people selling them. You see, the drug prices are created by the demand. And as long as you have addicts seeking product, people are going to be like, I can make money and deliver the product. So, broken see blind one.
Right. And we're certainly not going to solve that ever on this show. We're not going to solve the technology issue. We're not going to pretend to on this show. But hopefully we got you thinking. And you know what? I think the responsible thing to do is to keep this conversation going. So send us your thoughts, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. I don't want to come off as minimizing the human aspect of this either. It's our job to talk about the technology and the technology policy of it. And we stick to our mission on the show. But Len Peralta, always illustrates our Friday show. And I think, Len, you do a good job of bringing in the human element of this story today.
Oh, it's super difficult to talk about. Lots of people heartbroken in a lot of different ways. So I wanted to do an image that was poignant and try to touch on that a little bit, the human element. This piece is called Tears Streaming Live. And for those of you who aren't watching the video, it shows a man and a woman behind a computer, just broken, broken down, sad. A lot of us feel this way. It's a real tragedy. So, I don't want to be super crass about saying, oh, you can buy this print. So what I'm doing, if you go to Patreon, patreon.com/Len, you can download this for free, right now. If you go to my Patreon, it'll be free through the weekend. And then, who knows what I'm going to do with it after that, but we're just scratching the surface here about being able to talk about stuff like this, and it needs to be talked about.
Yeah. It's really good, Len. I can't even look at it right now without tearing up, to be honest. So,
it's tough.
Thanks for doing that.
You're welcome.
Let's all take a breath now, and say, New Zealand, we're with you. And, thank you, Patrick Norton.
Thanks for having me. Feel very quiet right now.
Yeah. I will wrap up our show from here. You can keep up with Patrick at techthing.com, at avxl.com, you can support this show lots of ways at dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
If you have feedback for us, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Talk to us, we'll talk back. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
See you Monday, folks.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.